Welcome to episode 173 of the CineSnob Podcast. I'm Jared Kingery.
I'm Cody Villafania.
And I'm Jocelyn Durand.
We've seemed to have all three improved our backdrops a little bit. Well, at least our cameras. I think Cody's, your backdrop is the same.
Mostly.
But you're better lit today. Mm-hmm. And Jocelyn, you filled in some blank space there on the wall.
And I changed the lighting a little.
Oh, look at that.
It's a little
I spent... $200 on webcams trying to test them out and find one, and I ended up using my iPhone. So,
yeah, you and I were going through that yesterday, and the ones you bought, like one of them looked really good. No, the only one that looked good is the iPhone.
yeah, one of them was impossibly dark, and the other one, the sync was off by like two whole seconds. It's just the worst.
Yeah. So again, we are coming to you from our second ever video show. Sorry if you're listening again.
Losers.
But Cody is wearing a Leatherheads hat. That's pretty much the only visual you need to know right now.
Mm-hmm. Classic George Clooney, John Krasinski two-hander.
Two-hander.
I think Clooney directed it.
What does it say? Is that a pun?
What does two-hander mean?
That's when, like, it's a dual leads. You guys haven't heard that term before? Am I making that up?
I'm not making that up. I didn't think Krasinski was a lead, though. But, okay, whatever.
A two-hander is a term... Oh, I guess it's only two main characters.
Mm. Okay.
I fucked up. That's fine.
Yeah, I do believe Clooney directed that, too.
There's a famous story where I think John Krasinski cut his hair for that movie. And he in the office like needed him for another thing, and he got a wig made for himself, and like nobody noticed.
Yeah, and, he had to wear a gym wig basically. That is probably available somewhere streaming now if you want to watch Leatherheads. I think I may have rented it from Redbox back when that was the thing to do.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
I do believe I've seen it, but I don't remember it. I think the Leatherheads it's a football movie, and it refers to them wearing the leather helmets.
Yeah, like, it takes place in like the I don't know what decade.
But all of them would be dead from CTE by now.
Old age at this point.
They would have all put bullets in their heart.
Jesus. That's a very specific reference.
Yeah, there's a responsibility when you wear a hat, though. What if someone came up to you and was like, that's my favorite movie. I love that movie.
Yeah,
let's
that's
talk
true.
About it. And you're like, oh, I'm sorry. This is a joke.
I mean, I don't know that would ever happen with the kind of hats I'm buying.
I don't know.
The whole 10 yards? What? That's my favorite movie.
Do you remember the Three Wolf Moon shirt that was a mild internet sensation?
Uh-huh.
I had one of those, and I wore it to work when I worked at the TV station. This is like 10 years ago. And one of the engineers, who was an older man, very sincerely looked at me and said, like, I see your shirt. I assume you're interested in astronomy. There's a great observatory out in Alpine, Texas. Like, he recommended an observatory based on my Three Wolf Moon shirt, and I had to be like, oh yeah, cool, thanks. Yeah,
I always fear that when I wear like some like free promo shirt that we get from like it's like South by Southwest, because it happened to me once where I was wearing I got at South by Southwest, Time Warner was giving out shirts back when it when I was like Spectrum or whatever, and it said ask me about free Wi-Fi or something. And I had to go, and like I hadn't done laundry, and I needed something to go like pick up food one day, and I was wearing it, and someone is like, so what's this thing about free Wi-Fi? I'm like, I have no idea. I'm so sorry.
I was wearing a Stranger Things shirt to the mall here. It's one of those fancy malls. It's called the Domain.
Oh yeah, the Domain.
It's the outdoor, and everything's really, really fancy. And I walked past these people, and it was a Hawkins, Indiana shirt. And they stopped me and said, hey, are you from Indiana? I said, no. And they're like, where's Hawkins? I said, it's from that TV show Stranger Things. And they're like, what? Like, you know, the sensation on Netflix. Like,
it's hasn't
huge.
Reached Indiana yet, you know?
Yeah, like, there were these people coming out of Neiman Marcus To be fair, I was very out of place at that mall. Whenever I go to that mall, I'm very out of place. I'm like, I go to get my glasses adjusted at the Warby Parker, and that's it. But I have to.
Man, going to a Warby Parker is a weird concept.
Yeah, well, they have in person.
Yeah, they have a store. I always have to get my glasses adjusted. These are brand new, so I have to get them.
Nerd.
Hey. There, it's no Leatherheads hat. I have to get them adjusted, and they always, because they come like, I have little tiny ears. Excuse me. You want to see my ears? Look how tiny those things are.
I think they look like normal ears.
You know who has tiny ears?
Who?
Former San Antonio Spurs great Richard Jefferson has ears.
Former Richard Jefferson, a great.
player.
I can't wear those. Those like headphone things that go over your ear.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Are the little hook, because it just falls off. Like it doesn't catch on anything.
He's bragging about his tiny ears now.
Also, what was the story about?
T-shirts.
By the way, there's an Amazon store at the domain, and you can buy anything there. You can buy for like Amazon prices, and I finally bought the first thing that I ever bought from there the other day, and it just so happens to be a Stranger Things book. So
it's full circle. That was weird.
Wow, yeah.
This is incredible.
Thanks. Also, you can return your Amazon packages there for free. That's what 90% of the foot traffic is people just taking shit back. So
shit, it's so good now that I've had to take webcams back. UPS will just come pick it up from your front door.
Huh. Really?
So you don't even have to go to you just select UPS pickup and you just pack it, and they come with the label and they knock on your door and you're just like, here you go.
Oh, and I've taken them to the UPS store.
They'll come to you, baby.
But see, the UPS store, you don't have to have the packing. You can just take the thing and be like, I'm returning this.
Yeah.
Or you can just put it back in the box that it came in.
Sure. But maybe sometimes your cat's already set in that box and, you know, it's really too late.
Yeah, the attachment is there, right?
I can't deprive the cat of this perfect Amazon box that its ass fits directly into.
Because you'll never get another one.
I did take a package back before to the UT. They have a campus Amazon thing. Jocelyn, this was probably way before your time.
I know. I'm an old person, so there was no Amazon when I was at UT.
It's in the Gregory Gymnasium.
Oh, I went to Gregory many times. So,
Yeah, I took a package back there once, and then like a week later is when that guy stabbed people there.
Oh yeah, when he was right around that area. Ooh.
Yeah.
I walked around UT recently and I felt that like that meme from with Buscemi where it's like, hello, fellow young people.
Oh yeah. Hello, fellow. How do you do, fellow kids?
I'm like, hello, I too am young. It was weird.
That was the best part about going to a community college, San Antonio College, because it doesn't, like, anyone could have been a student anytime. Mm-hmm. Like, my friend and I had this teacher who was like, oh, I get mistaken for a student all the time. We were like, yeah, because old people go here too. Like, it wasn't like she looked like she was, you know, a 20-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the last time I was on the UT campus was to get my passport.
These are all very random things that you have to do at UT campus.
Well, they have a passport office, and it's better than going to the goddamn post office.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but I feel like an old man walking around anywhere near there. There was Cabo Bob's burrito that my wife and I like to go to. They finally opened a location closer to our house, but we used to have to go to the one near campus, and it was like being a narc. Like, yes, I enjoy burritos. Where can I find the drugs?
Yes, exactly.
Anyway, this conversation has derailed into enough. Yeah. So we've got some movie news. Cody, you have a story about the Russo brothers and another huge Netflix movie for them.
Yeah, I think it comes on the heels of Extraction being a mega hit. And I think one of, if not the biggest Netflix, I think it is the biggest Netflix movie of all time. And so one quick thing that you and I talked about briefly was this idea that Netflix added 10 million subscribers during the pandemic, because those numbers are eye popping because we have
it's okay, Carrie. Go ahead.
Here, we'll put yeah, it a little bit go. Blurry. So, you know, you and I talk about regularly about how it seems like at some point Netflix just has all the subscribers they're going to have. Like if you like at this point, if you're interested in Netflix, you have it already. And somehow they continue to add, you know, millions of subscribers. But anyway, Netflix is devoting the most money they ever have on a movie, which is $200 million budget, which is massive for Joe and Anthony Russo, the Russo brothers, directing a script by Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely, who wrote the
Winter
Captain
Soldier,
America movies,
Avengers,
and Avengers Endgame, and it's starring Chris Evans and Ryan Gosling. It's like an espionage thriller. So, I mean, you're getting two massive megastars with the people who directed the biggest movie ever, written by the people who wrote the biggest movie ever, and it's going directly to Netflix. So, I didn't ever think that Netflix would corner a market on like big budget action movies, but it seems like every time they seem to have like big talent come these days, it's for like, you know, bringing Michael Bay for God's sake to Netflix. So yeah, I think it's super interesting and another big sign that Netflix is taking over everything.
Well, I guess it helps the international market, like it, because they can distribute themselves, you know, to any international market. Because Extraction was pretty heavily a pretty heavy international production with I think a lot of where they were like Indian stars, right? The Bollywood, not, I don't know if you want to call it Bollywood, but like the people there were known names in India. I think it was shot there too, right?
Or, I think so.
Yeah. Did you ever see Extraction, Jocelyn?
You know, I didn't. I was on the fence about whether I should or not, and then I heard it was like just a completely average kind of a movie, like, so maybe I will catch it one day. Yeah, exactly. It's like, it was fine.
There's some pretty great action stuff. There's a chunk in the middle that's like one take. I mean, it's not really one take, but it looks like one take that was actually really cool.
I'm a sucker for those. I love, even if they're just pretending to be one take nowadays.
Yeah, like it finally ends with like someone getting hit by a car.
See, if you had told me that now, I want to see it because
it's right there on Netflix. You can just go watch that. And you know, even the you know, like they're not corner cutting movies. They're legit action movies. Because even the Michael Bay movie was a ridiculous Michael Bay movie. You know, it wasn't anything less than what you would expect from him. I think
it wasn't Bird Box also.
Yeah,
Netflix movie.
Yeah,
Sandra Bullock doesn't do anything anymore.
She does too. She did Bird Box.
Well, that's what I mean.
No, I know.
She does Bird Box. Come on,
Jared.
Bird Box.
Touché, Machine Gun, you got me there.
Machine Gun Kelly's in it too. So
I did not know that.
Did you see Bird Box?
I did. Yeah, was he one of the main guys? I think it was before I knew who he was.
Yeah, he's the guy that like has sex with the girl on the washing machine and then they steal the car. And then
yeah. That's who I thought he would probably Spoilers. Be if I took a... Oh, it's been like 2 years.
I don't even remember. I watched Bird Box like 6 months ago for the first time and I don't even remember what happened.
I never saw it.
They go to the sanctuary. They go down the river.
To
a bird sanctuary?
Yeah, it kind of is.
It's not great. There's a lot of hype to it, but it's not great. Anyway, this is the first. So Extraction wasn't directed by the Russo brothers, but I believe it was written by one of them, right?
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was written by Joe, I think.
So to actually have them direct is a huge, huge deal for Netflix.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that the big budget action movie hasn't really died. It just has migrated. Because I feel like it was dead for a little while.
Well, it depends, because I think the one interesting thing is, and I don't, this is me thinking about this in the moment, but like, I wonder if they'll go like R-rated with it, because I think that having an R-rated big budget movie is easier to do on a streaming service where like a kid can just put on the Netflix account you know, versus trying to, you know, go to the box office or whatever. Or they, you know, parents might be more lenient. And I think it has a greater appeal if there's less hurdles to clear on an adult. And I was going to say adult movie. That's not what I mean.
Well, they don't rate anything, right? Like MPAA. It's all like TVMA or whatever.
I think that that's not true because most Netflix stuff has a theatrical release component to it, even if it's just like Oscar, for Oscar rules or whatever.
Not Bird Box.
Yeah. I don't know, but maybe. I don't know.
So. I don't know why I keep using that as my reference for Netflix.
Yeah, they've had Bird Box was rated R.
They've had like a dozen. They've had like a dozen movies come out since Bird Box, at least. So
that's my point of reference for it, though.
I'm like you said, Cody, I'm curious as to how many people just don't have Netflix yet that are still making this profitable enough for them to be at like spending this sort of money on things, unless they're just trying to kind of throw their weight around like they do, which is kind of what I think they do with a lot of this stuff is, cause again, you and I talked about this, Cody, with, I think Sean Donnelly on our other show, Corin Stream. It's about how much money they throw at stand-ups.
Yeah.
You never really kind of see, like, none of those things ever become like a cultural touchstone. It's just sort of content to be consumed.
Right. Well, for a while, Netflix was just giving out like 3 or 4 season orders to everything. Like, everything was getting another season, regardless of how it was received.
Yeah.
And they were just, I think they were just throwing money at content. And I think they're doing that less now because they're giving less renewals, but.
But they have that. But that the thing is that content lives forever on Netflix. Like, it doesn't go away. The stuff that they make doesn't go away, at least not at this point yet.
Well, now they have that Charlize Theron one that just came out too, and that's a movie.
Yeah.
So they're like big stars are doing this.
Well, and they of course their big thing was The Irishman last year, and which one did they get? They bought Lovebirds, right? That's where that mm-hmm. premiered.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's been a long time coming for them to actually step up their movie content. Cause I think it was not too long ago, Cody and I were talking about it on this show, how shitty their movie content was compared to their mm-hmm. TV content.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I would argue still.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think they do the TV stuff way better, but they've kind of taken that middle market that's gone, that teen romantic comedy thing, and really run with it. Mm-hmm. I haven't watched any of those movies.
Yeah, that's true. They're kind of on all fronts improving. And maybe I think the people who didn't have Netflix originally are probably just like, their ex-girlfriend is changing the password, so they're having to get their own account.
Yeah, maybe that must be what it is like these people are finally kicking other people mm-hmm. off their accounts to to log in. Have either of you had it long enough that you were getting the DVDs?
Oh, mm-hmm. yes. Still do.
Oh, no.
Wow. Yeah.
Well,
why?
Because there's a lot of... well, now with HBO Max, I probably need to not, but there's just a lot
Criterion?
Of... Yeah. I mean, gotcha. All my Kurosawa stuff you can't get.
You can get on Criterion Channel.
Well, there you go. Now I need to get that.
Yeah.
But then then you don't have a reason to check the mail anymore. Uh-huh. Right? I want to say that,
Yeah. Sorry.
I have a... I still have it, and because they let you keep it. It was a... disc for the Wii, the Nintendo Wii.
Oh, I remember that.
That you used to have to load to put to watch Netflix on there.
Yeah,
and then they changed it to like a download. But I still have that disc somewhere. Wow. So that's the one that's Netflix cool. thing I still have.
That's a relic.
Yeah. So is the Wii. I remember I went to someone's house like in, I want to say it was like 6 years ago, and they were still watching Netflix through the Wii. I was like, God dang.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's almost hard to do, to not have another device around.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I remember the first Netflix device I had was a Blu-ray player. And that was a big deal for me to get that like built into a Blu-ray player. And then now I'm just like, everything streams it. So who gives a shit? Like, anyway. Anything else before we move on?
No.
No.
I'm going to say no. I'm going
to say right. no. Let's go ahead and move on to reviews.
Here are this week's reviews.
First up, we have Father, Soldier, Son.
Avoid a bowling gate at night. Because it's like dark and they can sneak. And then they can go. American soldier. My dad is my superhero.
So this is a Netflix documentary, as you can see, made in partnership with the New York Times, following a soldier, an army soldier, who was injured in Afghanistan, and sort of how he dealt with that and his family over the course of a decade. Those are his sons you see in the trailer. Cody, tell us about Father, Soldier, Son and what you thought of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most interesting thing about it that comes to light as you watch it is that it is something that takes place over 10 years. So the movie starts, you know, kind of talking about, you know, him being in Afghanistan and then coming back and then how difficult it is to kind of, you know, only be there for 2 weeks and then going away. And then the next time we see the family, you know, he's been shot. In injured in Afghanistan and is coming home and trying to essentially, I would say the bulk of the movie is about reintegration, into society as being someone who had to, you know, leave the army and leave his career behind. And I think showing it over the course of 10 years really allows you to see the kind of impact that it had. And it's a very impactful movie. In many different ways. And then the movie, how do I put this? The movie takes a turn.
yeah, this
to
was,
say the least.
Yeah, yeah. That, I mean, there's a very dark moment in this family's life. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think that sort of changes the course of the movie just a little bit, in kind of really, really. I mean, it's a gutting movie at times, and I think that, you know, as powerful as those parts are, and as raw as it is, and I really appreciate that in documentaries. I want documentaries to be, you know, really raw and open. I think the movie suffers a little bit from being a little meandering at times, and I think that, you know, with conceivably 10 years of footage, there's a lot of parts where I feel like it wasn't used very, very economically. I feel like there's some scenes that kind of go on too long. I also think that the way that the narrative kind of unfolds, it kind of leaves a lot of dots to be connected. I don't think that the main character of the movie, and I cannot remember his name right now.
David Eich?
Yes, yes. Yeah. I don't think that David at any point is introspective on the level that I would have expected about what he has encountered and how it has impacted his life and, you know, the decision to, well, not the decision, but having his life kind of put to a halt and essentially leading to, you know, his leg getting amputated and things like that. And I think the movie kind of lets the footage speak for itself instead of really connecting the dots through talking heads or through editing or anything else. So I have mixed feelings because I think it's really powerful. I also think that it feels a little poorly constructed.
I'm sorry, his name is Brian Eich. I don't know where
I was going to say Brian.
I apologize. I apologize.
Love trivia.
Brian Eich. Jocelyn, what about you? What did you think?
I'm surprised after that preview you didn't cut back and I was just like sobbing. It's
yeah,
so emotional. I was bracing myself because I knew it was going to be an emotional movie because, of course, what it's about. But it's not emotional in the way that you think it's going to be. So I was like tearing up within the first 4 minutes of the movie. And that is just like literally the first. I mean, it's obviously the first 4 minutes, but it's like 1% of the journey that you go on with this family. is him serving in Afghanistan and having to leave his sons as a single dad, which I thought was the point of the movie. And it really isn't. Like Cody said, it's really about his integration back. And then this, like, it's funny that Cody said gutting because I said it was a gut punch. And I haven't had a gut punch like that in a movie since, I don't know if y'all saw Dear Zachary, but it was another Netflix documentary that just will like blindside you. And so, as far as like meandering goes, I enjoyed how it just kind of told the story of their life. And I was taken by the photography and the cinematography. I thought it was beautifully shot. So I was okay with it kind of. It did drag a little in the middle. But I was okay with that. I was patient with it. It reminded me a little bit about, I know y'all chose like Boyhood as one of the best movies of the last decade. So maybe that's been on my mind lately, but it sort of reminded me of like a real life Boyhood, but with more of the emotional impact because you're actually seeing a life. Like you're not just seeing an actor who has aged. You are seeing this family grow from the time they're, you know, six to the time they're teenagers and going on and turning, you know, 18. So that for me, all of it all together, I loved it so much.
Yeah. I'm going to agree with Cody a little bit that I feel like it doesn't quite get as introspective as I thought it was going to. And I don't know that that's really the movie's fault. I mean, this is a real person and they have real feelings toward this thing. You know, as a sort of relic of the War on Terror era, you might expect it to be a little more critical of that time. Because there's a point in the movie where someone, they're at a Renaissance festival, and a character comes up and asks Brian if losing his leg was worth it. And he still says yes, which, you know, I don't know that any kind of dramatization that you watch now, any kind of, you know, movie that would be made about that now would say yes. Again, that was in 2014 or so when he had that done, or when he had the amputation.
And then there's that part right after that where he like kind of complains where he's like, I feel like I'm being like just watched.
You're feeling sorry for him.
Yeah, that there's feeling sorry for me. I think there was a couple moments like that really were kind of quiet, great moments in that movie.
And he talks about like taking advantage of the military. You know, he's the one that's, you know, he's not that he's taking, but he feels as though he's, you know, having to live on the government dole. And that may be like just this, it's sort of a, you know, it's a working class, you know, family and neighborhood that they're from. You know, I believe it starts in Wisconsin and ends up in New York,
Syracuse,
I think.
Syracuse,
yeah. So it's, you know, it's a little more of a blue collar story than maybe what you're used to with this stuff. That said, I don't think that the story itself is not, you know, it's emotional and it is a gut punch. There's a huge, massive gut punch that has nothing to do with war or, you know, reintegrating into society or anything after that that happens to this family.
I think it kind of does because it inspires the older son to join the army.
Well, true, but it's not a direct. What I mean is not it's not a direct effect of his injury and his time away. You know, I do kind of wish it had a little more of an arc there in the middle, because the middle feels a little lumpy and kind of directionless. You know,
but impatient.
I don't disagree with you on that. It did start to feel long though in the middle.
There's a long, I cannot remember what it was, but there's a really long take of like, I think maybe like the scene of him running or, you know, there's just a few takes like that seem to meander. And I think not to get too in the weeds on the psychological part of this stuff, but you know, one of the things that I find interesting is when people who leave the military, it's so ingrained as part of their identity that they get out and they don't know who they are or how to be outside of the military, whether it's the structure, whether it's the, you know, the just the identity of being a soldier. And I think that we can see that, but we don't hear about it in the movie. Like, we can see him wasting away playing computer games and stuff, but he never talks about it, you know? There's even where his fiance says something like, he probably wouldn't admit it, and then you don't get his perspective on it. And I think that's the component and the missing link that's not there, which is we can see him struggling with reintegration into society and identity crisis, but we don't hear him ever be introspective about it, which is the thing that I feel like is missing.
Right. And like his identity is still rooted in that, you know, his truck is covered in army stickers and American flags and everything else. So yeah, you're right. This identity that he's, you know, still, you know, using is not accurate to who he is anymore. And I think it's interesting that it never really discusses what he's doing now, like for a job. You know, like
his business,
he's making fishing tackle, but you know, other than that, it doesn't really approach anything else, kind of personal life. And I don't know. I mean, I again, these are real people, so I don't necessarily expect him to get introspective just for the sake of the movie. But I wonder if it was something that was pressed on him by the filmmakers.
Totally disagree.
What do you mean?
They did a great job. I think that it showed, especially the type of person he was, that he was staying positive for his children. And they did have that moment where he breaks down at the VA hospital because he's so frustrated because of this injury that he sustained in war that he can't do the things that he used to do. Then they show him running on, you know, the side of the road, which I thought was also a little foreshadowing. So I think all of that played a purpose, in a very subtle, lovely way.
But by the end of the movie, though, he says he's doing okay, and his wife says, no, he's not.
Right. But that kind of goes back to the whole, like, you know, I'm a man. Like, it's like when he was telling his son, why is he crying when he's wrestling? Like, well, I don't like that he's doing that. You know, it all kind of plays a role in this character that he is.
But none of that is explicit. None of that is explicit, and I think that's part of the issue.
You know, you got to pick up on subtleties sometimes. I feel like it was like, it doesn't have to beat you over the head with it, especially when it's a real person.
Well, but
it's not a scripted movie.
But again, I don't think this is a happy ending.
Oh, no. Yeah. No, not at all.
But I mean, I don't think that he's in a better place when the movie ends. He's in a better place regarding his low point. But I don't think he's in a good place, maybe I'm reading too much into that. But it doesn't feel like
he has to be, though. I think that's kind of like the beauty of life is like.
Well, but that's what I mean is I don't know that there's any introspection to be had because I don't know that anything has really kind of altered his state of mind. And like Cody said, he's clearly having trouble. You know, I'm not. A trained expert as Cody might be, but you know, I you can see it in the guy's face that his actions and the way the movie presents it, at least, that he's not well. You know, he's not handling reintegration well, and then he's not handling the idea of having lost his leg and being sort of a burden well. And I don't know that the movie really addresses that at all.
Yeah,
I think that's a big piece too that I really agree with, which is like there is something to be said for him being stubborn and keeping his leg and then losing his leg and then figuring out, you know, how his identity again changed. Because again, you see him in the hospital and then it cuts to 3 years later, and like there's no like that gap seems to be too big for the amount of struggle that must have happened during that period of time.
Yeah.
So it's just editing and structure for me that, I mean, look, don't get me wrong. It's super powerful and I think it's good. I think it's a good movie, but I think editing and structure sort of falter it a little bit.
Well, I assume that at some point, maybe that 3 year gap is explained by the idea that they didn't, they changed their mind. I don't know the background of the production on this. Maybe they decided we better check back in with this guy. You know, it wasn't.
I would be curious to hear how they made it and how they, you know, their thoughts and the story behind the making of the movie. I think that probably plays a big role in this because I mean, they just selected this family, and was it a part of a smaller piece that they were doing? And then they just decided, like you said, to check back in 3 years later. I would be interested to learn a little more about that.
Okay, grades, Cody.
Yeah, like I said, I think that it has problems that keeps it from being like truly transcendent, but I think it's solid enough. And I was trying to rank it against another movie that we're talking about today, and I think this was better than the other one. So by simple math, I'm giving this a B.
B. Okay, Jocelyn.
And Cody has problems is who has problems here.
Wow.
Dang, that's pretty harsh.
Jesus.
The movie has problems. You have problems. That's just my defensive mechanism because I love this movie so much. I gave it an A minus.
A minus. All right. I'm gonna echo Cody. I'm gonna give it a B. I think it's a powerful story, but I do think there are some details I would have liked to know more about this family and what they were dealing with. Sort of on a larger scale, but yeah, that is streaming now on Netflix. It's called Father, Soldier, Son. Let's move on to our next movie, Showbiz Kids.
Any industry that has that much power and is that competitive starts to become, well, who can take the most abuse?
It's something that parents need to see and understand that these people are right there.
People are coming out and talking about things that they've experienced so that young women and young boys who are coming up in the game can have more awareness.
Mark had expressed interest that he wanted to be an actor. This year, we've had to go into savings.
This is a documentary on HBO from director Alex Winter, who you may know better as Bill S. Preston Esquire from the Bill and Ted movies, a former child star himself. This is about child stars in Hollywood, sort of checking in with people that grew up in the spotlight and how they're handling it now, and people that are trying to break in as children. Jocelyn, tell us about Showbiz Kids and what you thought of it.
Sure. So Showbiz Kids is largely a talking head documentary. We have lots of interviews with some Showbiz Kids that you may remember, like Maura Wilson, who was Matilda, and she was in Miss Doubtfire, and you know, people like Evan Rachel Wood. I think that they gathered, or Alex found, a good kind of group of people to give all sorts of perspectives on what it's like to be a child star. It's kind of difficult because, you know, there's just so many stories out there and there's so many infamous stories out there. In addition to that, we have also the little boy who played Elliot on E.T.,
Henry Thomas.
Thank you.
San Antonio native Henry Thomas.
That's right. I know. Cloak and Dagger. I mean,
yes.
Yeah. So, him and along with, Will Wheaton, which I think are two of the, you know, when you talk about child actors, you really have to kind of, talk about them. And they have an interesting perspective, of course, from the '80s and Mila Jovovich. Okay. And now I'm just listing the people who are in this movie, but,
But also the recently deceased Cameron Boyce.
Glad you said that, because this movie for me, watching these child stars tell these stories, watching at the same time some families who are trying to kind of make it in this industry was just utterly depressing to me in an interesting way, but it was just like, man, this is so sad to me that they are trying so hard to attain this dream. And then to see Cameron Boyce and his interviews, which is, of course, he was a Disney star who passed away in his 20s, I think from like an epileptic seizure. And just to see how, you know, much he's used in this movie is, wow, it's just really sad. So I think a super fascinating sort of, you know, deep dive into all of these different people's personal perspectives, and at the same time just making it very clear that this is not a really healthy lifestyle for children to be a part of.
Cameron Boyce, I believe, died almost, I think it's almost a year ago now.
Right, so it was exactly a year ago. It was like July 6th.
You okay over there, Cody?
Yes.
Anyway, Cody, what did you think?
Well, I think that it certainly gathers a good list of actors that I think span of several different generations of people that people will know. I think that what it does good is it shows these actors talking a little bit about how it impacted them on a personal level. I think where it gets a little lost is creating some sort of hypothesis about what happens on a global scale or like a more generalized statement about child actors and what happens when, you know, Hollywood and parents and money and all this stuff gets exchanged, and also showing the darkness that happens to a lot of child stars. You know, I think one of the things that it does is it posits a correlation between child stardom and problems in adulthood, whether that's showing people who have died of drug overdoses or people who have had personal psychological problems. And I don't think it ever posits why. I don't think it ever connects the dots of why or what the correlation or what the connection is. And so what it really is to me is a bunch of people telling their individual stories that doesn't really come together as a collective for me. Again, I think it's fine. I think that it offers interesting perspective. I think that, you know, some of the stuff is really bad. I mean, I think the Mila Jovovich stuff is probably the most disturbing of all of what we see, you know, seeing, you know, how like blatantly sexualized she was as a 12-year-old, just like really kind of disturbing stuff with her and how she got caught up in it. And I think that piece is fascinating. And then there's stuff like Henry Thomas, which is fine. It's a fine enough story, but it doesn't really pack much drama to it, I don't think, other than just kind of him telling his experience as a child star and then how his mother was involved. So again,
it's like they wanted to get Drew Barrymore, and that's the closest they could get is Henry Thomas.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting as a collection of individual stories, but as a collective piece, it falls just a bit short for me.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there, Cody. I think it's interesting enough, but there is kind of a stretch to make it seem as though this childhood stardom is inherently a bad thing. And maybe I'm reading too much into that, but it also, talks about, I think Will Wheaton, who I didn't know was so bitter about what happened, because I'd never heard of any of those stories about Will Wheaton's parents sort of forcing him into it. But he makes a correlation between movies getting bad reviews and his mental state, which I don't, like, I get he's a kid, but I don't know that that's a true thing across the board. That may have just been his experience, and not that it's invalid, but I just don't know that it applies to everyone involved. I do think it stumbles a little bit when it brings up someone like Jada Pinkett, who I don't think has a leg to stand on. And Cody and I were talking about this the other day. Like, you look at Jaden and Willow Smith. Like, I don't know that those are your, you know, you have this really ability to criticize people when you're guilty of sort of doing it yourself. Like, you know, you bought Jaden Smith a white Batman suit, you know, to wear to Kanye West's and Kim Kardashian's wedding or whatever the fuck happened. You know, it's not exactly a textbook example of how to have a well-adjusted child. But I do think there are some pretty, interesting stories. I don't know that anything is kind of powerfully, against being a child star. And I think that's probably just because of who they were able to get. Evan Rachel Wood has a story about, basically she was kind of forced into a gender role she wasn't comfortable with. And sure, that's not ideal, and it probably wouldn't happen anymore. Mila Jovovich talks about being sexualized at a young age. Yeah, that probably wouldn't happen anymore either. As for everything else, though, I don't know that it's particularly revelatory as for, because it hints at a Corey Feldman discussing pedophilia, which is a huge thing he's done. I don't know if you've heard of any of Corey Feldman's stories. You know, he alleges that Corey Haim was essentially raped by, I think, Charlie Sheen is what he alleges, on the set of Lucas. So, I mean, there's definitely dark stories there. I just don't know that any of these people have anything that dark, and not that it needs to be dark to be interesting, but it doesn't really paint the picture that I think it's looking to paint because of the cast of people that they got to do this.
Yeah, I think Will Wheaton was probably just there as a representation of, like, the River Phoenixes and the people who kind of, in that era that, you know, many of them turned to drugs, like the Coreys and those actors. And I think it's funny that y'all both mentioned that, because it, I think it is true that it's sort of like they chose someone who is kind of like in the circle of those stories, but not really someone who could directly say, like, this happened to me.
Well, and like, I don't know that you can draw a direct line between River Phoenix being a star and dying of a drug overdose. I just don't know that that's a connection. I mean, certainly, you know, he wouldn't have been at the Viper Room, a huge popular club, you know, hanging with Johnny Depp. But, you know, that you could draw a straight line between those two things. I don't know that that straight line exists. You know, it's just, you know, normal people die of drug overdoses. You know, obviously something like along the lines of Mara Wilson saying, you know, that grown men knew her name at 9 years old and all this other stuff. And, you know, that's the creepy part. You know, she doesn't have any kind of horror story beyond that, thankfully, for her sake.
Her talking about when she reached puberty and she wasn't that cute little girl anymore. I mean, that's the classic story of, like, Shirley Temple and the other woman who was, you know, famous in the 1920s. But
Yeah.
So I think that's what Mara was bringing to it, as far as, like, by the time she was, like, you know, 13, she had been thrown away. And she's 13 years old, you know?
Again, I don't know that the movie draws that line clear enough, you know.
Yeah, and I also don't know that the current kids add anything to the mix, because they're not stars, right? So they're not, like, neither of them have the level of fame, if any, that everyone else in this movie is being interviewed, So, you know, it would have made sense if they would have been interviewing, like the Stranger Things kids or something, where you can actually talk about what it's like being a child star or a famous kid in this generation. I think Karen Boyce is the closest it gets to that. And I guess he serves as kind of an auxiliary for that. But I also don't think that it connects well with these kids going on auditions and stuff like that. I don't know that connects for me either.
And you know, it doesn't touch on, like, YouTube celebrities either. And
right.
I think that's a big kind of blind spot for it, is that, you know, it talks about this mom and son that we saw in the clip going out to L.A. from Orlando for pilot season, which, fine. But, you know, we get to see the social media accounts of these kids, but there's nothing, you know, kind of talking about this new level of fame that is accessible to children, that if you look at, you know, YouTube stars, there's kids that review toys and shit that are millionaires now. And I just think that there's, you know, there's a lot of horror stories obviously to be told. I just don't know that this gathered the ones necessary to make it powerful enough to sort of put anyone off. You know, not to denigrate anybody's experience at all. And I want to make that clear. It's just that you're hearing about these things secondhand. You know, you're hearing about Corey Feldman's rape allegations from a clip of him, not from him directly. You're hearing about River Phoenix's drug overdose from Will Wheaton, who at that point admits he wasn't really even close to River anymore. You know, it lacks something. And I think that's probably just as a result of who they were able to get for the documentary. So let's go to grades. Jocelyn, what did you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think it was just...
Oh, no. Sorry.
Oh, no, where did I go?
I'm sorry. I hit the wrong button.
You momentarily got kicked off the show. Shit. It's okay.
Sorry. Jocelyn, what did you think?
Do you really care to know what I think?
I'm sorry. I hit
the wrong... what did you think? And you're
Bye.
Off.
Bye.
The buttons are too close together.
That's like an eject button.
What did you think? Shut up. Sorry.
So no, I agree. I think it was kind of like too much of a hodgepodge of different people and too many different sort of ideas that they were trying to explore that they sort of alluded to, but they never really like outright said. But I think at the end of the day, I do think that it was worth watching. So I'm giving it a B minus.
Cody.
Yeah, I'm right there alongside Jocelyn. You don't have to kick me out to find this out. I'll stay in. I think that it's totally fine. I think there's some interesting perspectives in here. And I think that it's, you know, the cast of people that they got, while maybe not having the most dramatic stories in some cases, certainly are the right people to have the perspective on it. So I wish that it was more, I guess, again, scalable to you know, child stardom as a whole instead of a collection of individual stories. But it's fine. I gave it a B minus as well.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a B minus too. I think I'm just going to echo the same things you did. It just doesn't. Both of you did. It doesn't quite have the impact I think it is looking to have, just because it doesn't have the stories to really back that up, other than secondhand stories or thirdhand stories. So B minus for me. And that is streaming now on HBO. I guess all platforms of HBO, whatever HBO you have, you can watch this. HBO Now, HBO Go, and HBO Max.
HBO or just normal. HBO.
Or just normal. HBO. If you're, you know, if you're at Light. If you're at a hotel and they have free HBO, you can watch it there. All right, let's go ahead and move on to our last movie, Money Plane.
It's called a Money Plane. Some of the baddest motherfuckers on the planet are on that plane, all craving action. Whatever you want to wager on, the Money Plane has you covered. You want to bet on a dude fucking an alligator? Money Plane.
Money Plane.
Hey. How many times did he say it in that clip?
I don't know, but he's going to say it again.
Money Plane.
Everybody drink.
Yeah, everybody yeah. Drink when he says Money
Plane. You would probably die.
Yeah, this is a an on-demand film that we skipped last week, but it kind of gained a little pop culture traction on the internet, so we decided to cover it. So, Cody, tell us what you thought of
Money Plane.
Wow, man, having this live is just another dimension to this whole thing. and you're saving that, by the way, so we can use this in the future.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, yeah. This is not the last you've heard of. Of you haven't heard the last of
Money Plane.
So yes, where to start? So this piece of cinema was I first heard about it by seeing the poster, where you see the poster that says Money Plane, and you're like, huh, I wonder what that's about. And
Money Plane.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so it stars, I mean, if you look at the poster, it's got Kelsey Grammer, it's got Thomas Jane, and it's got, Denise Richards, who are both in the movie for a collective 10 minutes, maybe, between them. And the rest is spent with, Adam Copeland. I refuse to call him Edge.
AKA The Edge.
WWE.
When you know you can't get Dwayne Johnson and you probably can't score John Cena. You go to The Edge.
You go to the rated R superstar, right?
Is that what it's?
That's his nickname. Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Is that because he looks coked out all the time?
You mean with his giant bug eyes constantly? So, Adam Copeland is not a subtle actor. I don't think he's bad, but man, he is just constantly bug-eyed looking. Why? It's weird. I don't understand it quite. So, one thing that becomes clear as you watch Money Plane is that all of the budget went to Kelsey Grammer and Thomas Jane and Denise Richards, and nothing was spent on things like set design or production value or props or an actual plane or anything that resembled an actual plane.
No, you know what? I was going to save this, but there's an oral history of it already on The Ringer.
Oh, wow.
And it was a real plane.
How?
I don't know, but it was.
Is it like a four-story plane?
The bathroom looked very realistic. And
yeah, no, it was a real plane. It was in New Orleans. They like found a plane they could use. Anyway, go ahead, wow. Cody.
It's not hard to find a plane.
Jocelyn can get you a plane today, dude. It's like a fucking tow.
Easy.
It's like a tow.
So you watch that clip and you think, okay, so dude fucking alligators, this is what we're in for. And then you get onto the money plane and people are just like, you know, playing blackjack and stuff. Like, it's just my favorite little small detail is when you walk in and they walk past like the concierge desk, there's just a shitty lava lamp, like just the worst set dressing of all time. It's just ever. So stupid.
There's so many curtains.
The curtains. that they bought on Amazon.
Go ahead, Cody.
So the premise of the movie is that Adam Copeland has a team of like robbers or thieves, I guess, and they go to do an art heist and the art isn't there. And then it turns out that Kelsey Grammer, who plays the Rumble, as he's nicknamed, Darius Grouch the Third.
Darius Grouch.
Or the Colonel.
Or Colonel.
Wait, why? He loves so nicknames.
Why was he called the Rumble?
I don't know.
Not, if his name, they're going to name the guy question. Grouch. Why don't they just call him Oscar? Like, that's.
Or Groucho or something.
Yeah, fuck it. Anyway, Cody, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I feel like this is going to happen a few times during the course of this.
Sorry.
No, please interject. So basically, Darius Grouch III, the Rumble, takes Adam Copeland's debt and has him do a job, which they're going to take down the money plane, which the money plane is this, again, as you hear, anything goes thing. So he puts together a team and he gets Thomas Jane, who plays his best friend. And the godfather of his children.
It's like an old war buddy, right?
Yeah, like an old war buddy, which, by the way, Thomas Jane is phoning this thing in like you wouldn't believe. Like, I clearly pissed that he couldn't do it over Zoom and is there begrudgingly. Like, just a really terrible, like, he's got, like, a pipe that he's fucking with the entire time.
By the way, that's, in the oral history, he brought that pipe.
Of course he did.
Obviously.
Of course he did. And so you have in a really terrible performance that he's just not committed at all. Kelsey Grammer, to his credit, is perhaps too committed, I think, maybe. but so once you get into the plane, they try to find I don't know what's going on. It's something to do with cryptocurrency, but yet there's also cash on the plane. Doesn't make sense. And then you get into this game. So he's got this partner. This joke never landed for the McGillicuddy joke. It's just such a weird thing.
They
keep on making this luck of the Irish joke and something like that with a guy who's probably not Irish. But then you start to see like what's actually happening on the the debauchery of the money plane, which leads to some really dumb stuff, especially when Mr. McGillicuddy gets stuck into some games that he never quite seems to understand what he's getting into, yet he's constantly getting into it. Like, he's like, yeah, I'll play this game, and then it's a game of Russian roulette, and he's like, he doesn't even notice or try to back out of it at all. And that whole Russian roulette scene, by the way, plays like a terrible comedy scene. that, the tone of it is weird as hell.
So we should add... Before we go any further, this is a Lawrence Brothers production.
Oh, I had that in my notes. A Lawrence Brothers vehicle is
So if you don't know the Lawrence Brothers, that would be Joey of Blossom fame, Matthew, mm-hmm, of Boy Meets World, and Mrs. Doubtfire, who also had a tiny appearance in our last documentary, and Andrew, the youngest. And they were part of they were all three on a show at one point.
Brotherly Love.
That's what it was called. Yes. Andrew Lawrence directs this. The youngest Lawrence brother directs this and has a small role.
And bless their hearts, they were there to support their brother, you know?
And the cowboy that Cody's talking about that played Russian roulette is Matthew Lawrence, and he is chewing the fucking scenery. And I I'm going to go back to this oral history thing again, because that oral history totally changed my mind on this movie. That part was... originally supposed to be played by Tom Arnold. Scheduling fell through, so Matthew Lawrence was like, I'll just do it.
And they threw a fake mustache on. Good.
But I think Matthew Lawrence is funny.
Yeah. I mean, the whole character, the whole part, you know, but man, Tom Arnold would have been great.
Yeah. Anyway. I'll wrap up here. There's a few things about it that I think are unintentionally hilarious. The music is so bad. And like, the musical cues in particular are so fucking like there's one scene where I think it's the scene where Edge and Kelsey Grammer are Adam Copeland and Kelsey Grammer are like talking about a plan, and like you hear this dramatic music, and then Kelsey Grammer says something about his wife and kids, and it just turns into this maudlin sappy like on an instant, like it just goes like that. It has some of the worst choreographed fight scenes you'll ever see. There's a scene where where Edge fights a guy in a cockpit where nobody can move, clearly. It's so poorly edited. And then the and apparently the guy's just incapacitated for hours on end. And eventually when they leave the money plane, they just leave it. They just leave it. There's no pilots left.
Yeah, that's true. Who was flying the plane?
Yeah.
He said it was on autopilot.
Okay, I wondered. I was waiting for them to say that, because I was like, I bet they're going to use autopilot.
Yeah.
As a cover, yeah. You know?
There's also a girl in their team who I'm so sorry to bash this woman, because I don't know her name or anything else about her, but it's just a really bad miscast, I think, where like this, she's like 4'5" and playing like this really badass woman who gets into fights with people, but also has this weird seduction element that feels really out of place. And then at one scene, there's a fight scene where she where it's also poorly edited, where she rips a guy's ears off, and it's playing to what can only be described as the best royalty free music they could possibly find.
Yeah.
So look, this movie is, it's bad. It's not unwatchably bad. It's also not like super fun bad. I laughed out loud multiple times at how shitty it was. But at the end of the day, it's just a very bad movie.
Money plane.
All right, Jocelyn, what did you think?
Well, I like that Cody said before we get on the money plane, because I'm going to start using that. Like, get on the money plane as like, get on board with what we're doing. Just get on the money plane. Yeah, there's so much to be bothered by in this movie. And top of my list was Edge's face.
That's mean.
It's not necessarily that his face, there's something wrong with his face. It's just the acting, like Cody said, it's like so very unsubtle. Like his eyes are constantly bugged. Like he looks like he is just on lots of drugs.
To be fair, I think that's one of his like quirks as a person, like as a wrestler too.
Well,
it really bothered me.
I don't think he's acting with his eyes bugged. I think he just has bug eyes.
You know what? if I'm staring at your face for an hour and a half and you it's bothersome, then that's gonna be an unpleasant time. Not just that, the costumes and the set, as Cody was saying, the sets are incredibly cheap. I mean, that first scene when they're going through, like, the metal detectors, I swear to God, it was like they were using cardboard boxes. Like, it might as well have been. And it's the extras are horrible. Like, it's just so, so clearly a, you know, low-budget movie. But then, at least, you know, you have these bad, bad movies, and then you have, like, good, bad movies. And this was not one of those good, bad movies. This was just bad, bad movie, because it's not even that fun. Even the crazy bets that McGillicuddy was getting into, like, they weren't clearly defined. Like, you know, Kelsey Grammer said, like, you want to bet on a guy fucking an alligator? Like, that's never entered into in the
doesn't
bet.
Happen, by the way.
It doesn't happen.
Spoiler alert.
But then there's, like, a part where a guy is, like, they say, like, it's, like, a guy against a cobra, and you never see the cobra. Did you notice that?
I couldn't afford the cobra. Bruh.
Of course they couldn't, but I would imagine like they could have gotten like a sock, you know, like that would have been at least creative. I would have liked to see them try to show that there was some cobra involved. And then the one where he was in a tank and I think there was supposed to be an alligator, but then also
it was piranhas.
His skin burned off. Okay, it was
piranhas. No, it was piranhas. And how fast they were betting on how long it would take for the piranhas to eat him to the bone.
Oh, well, that makes more sense, because I thought maybe I missed something and it was like a vat of acid that he was supposed to be.
It's not a movie logic problem, Jocelyn. That's a you problem.
That was, you know, I was trying to keep up with this, like, you know, increasingly dense plot that this you know, perfect movie.
It's a thinker.
It was was so, so bad. I think that's all. That's all I wrote. Oh, I have one last thing that really tickled
okay.
me. The painting at the end.
It's literally. Oh my! That's like a shot in this movie is. Oh. Like,
it was such a gift. I loved that so much. It was like a stick figure with like the middle fingers up. Like, and that was like them like sticking it to the man at the end. So that was just something else I wanted to mention that I really enjoyed.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to mention again that I this oral history that is on theringer.com.
I'm going to pull it up now.
About Money Plane and the kind of how it came to be. And I just want to mention we're talking about Kelsey Grammer clearly having a blast, I would say. And the first quote from him as to how he ended up in the movie, he says, quote, "The film crossed my desk with an offer, and it seemed like a fun mustache twirling kind of character that would not change my life, certainly, but put me in a sandbox with a new actor I like, Adam Copeland. That is usually one of the things I respond to in this job, new people. I also quite like Thomas Jane, and it was nice to work with him again." Now, I'm not gonna say that Kelsey Grammer doesn't know who the fuck Adam Copeland is, but I'm pretty sure he doesn't know who Adam Copeland is. And also, he and Thomas Jane share no screen time
right.
at all. So... And I would assume they were both there for an hour on separate days. So I don't really know how accurate that is. But hey, you know what? He's playing the game and he's talking about
it. By
the
way, there's like five pieces of content about Money Plane on The Ringer right now.
Oh, I know. Like yeah.
Five articles.
Yeah. It's got that like kind of bad movie zeitgeist thing going on right now. And I do wish it were more fun, but I think after reading about it on The Ringer and I knowing what went into it, it's pretty self-aware bad, and I don't think it's too self-aware bad, if that makes sense. Like there's a lot of comparisons I've seen to Snakes on a Plane, which is just sort of not good. It's you think it's going to be better and it's not, but this is clearly cheap and clearly you know, kind of thrown together. And I mentioned this to Cody. I was like, you know, the Lawrence brothers, they're not hacks, but they're in this really hacky thing. But I think it's just like they wanted to make this movie and they found someone who could. And it was this low budget shit producer. So they said, fuck it, let's do it. And they said they shot on a real plane in New Orleans. And I think they shot some in Bosnia too. And then clearly the warehouse or whatever that art museum is just a shitty warehouse at the beginning. And, you know, the curtains in, the check-in for the Money Plane at Money Plane Terminal, which appears to just be like a major airport where this highly illegal flight is leaving from. You know, it doesn't quite get to the campiness I think it needs to. I think it gets close when the McGillicuddy character starts like watching those crazy things happen. I think that's where the real promise of this thing kind of comes to light. But the edge, Adam Copeland.
Thank you.
The new thespian Adam Copeland.
I'll take Adam Edge Copeland as well.
Adam the Edge Copeland.
Isn't it? I don't think it's the edge. No, I think it's just Edge.
Is it? Oh, I'm thinking of U2.
U2.
Sorry.
Yeah, Adam Copeland is just Edge.
Edge. Shit. So it has this WWE actor, WWE professional wrestler in the lead, and he spends most of his time sitting in a fucking cockpit. Like, why is he not the one beating everyone up? Like, isn't that what we came for?
Like, he gets in the one fight in the cockpit, which is just him, like, slamming the guy's head against the cockpit.
Which, if you read that Ringer piece again, that guy really started bleeding.
Of course, no. He did.
There's a lot to this movie that's bad. But I do think, ultimately, it's decently watchable for being a bad movie. I do wish it were a better bad movie. like it were a little more batshit. Because the Kelsey Grammer stuff is pretty batshit. Like the stuff he's saying is insane. And that he sort of ends up playing, and I've seen this a bunch of places, sort of a Scarface slash Sideshow Bob mixture. is pretty interesting to see. I think the movie sort of wastes a lot of time. It's only an hour and 22 minutes, and it still feels like it's wasting time, just sort of dragging its feet at certain points. Because like the first thing they do on this debaucherous money plane is just play regular old Texas Hold'em.
Texas Hold'em. Yeah, what a missed opportunity.
Yeah. Anyway, let's go to grades. Cody, what did you think of
Money Plane?
Well, thank you, Mr. Grouch. I have to say, I was talking to you, by the way, not Kelsey Grammer.
Mean.
I'm sorry, Jocelyn's been being mean to everyone. I thought I could do it too.
Jocelyn was giving us shit about like not liking this documentary, and she's making fun of Adam Copeland's eyes.
Yeah. No, it, just his fucked up face, I guess.
Yeah, sorry.
Look, there's no way to slice or dice this. It's a bad movie. Like you were saying, Jared, I do wish that it leaned into its craziness just a little bit more. And I think that, if it's self-aware, I think it could have afforded to be maybe a little bit more clearly self-aware, because you can't really tell if they're in on the joke, I don't think, just on the surface. You would hope so, but you don't know.
I think by the time Joey Lawrence shows up, I think they are. And then the character, the guy who's calling all of it, who was in The Sopranos, I don't know what his name is. It's like he played Mikey Palmese in the first season. But yeah,
he's kind of like Joey's strong arm.
Yeah. I think it's pretty evident that it's a big gag, but yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah. So yeah, I can't, when you're scoring this on the bad movie curve is a tough one, because you always have to judge based on how bad the movie is, but also, does it deserve like a point higher because it's entertaining or whatever. So ultimately what I landed on was a D+.
Damn. Wow. Okay. Jocelyn.
Oh no. I honestly was sitting here thinking like, how do you grade a movie like this? But I think there could have been more creativity in the debauchery element to it. I think that's really what this movie is selling, is that, you're going to go on this money plane and they're going to bet on some crazy things. And it was
You wanted to see the guy fucking the alligator.
No, but I just think that they
it's okay. It's okay to say you did.
It's like, okay, when you watch Snakes on a Plane, it delivers. This didn't really deliver the one thing that it was saying that it's
to be fair, the movie's not called Guy Fucking an Alligator on a Plane.
Get off of that, because that's not what I want to see, okay?
I do remember a snake biting a woman on the nipple in Snakes on a Plane. I do believe that is, I don't know who the woman is, but the actor in the scene, like she's having sex in the bathroom, and I believe it's Taylor Kitsch from Friday Night Lights.
No, he was on Snakes on a Plane?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Man. Anyway, okay, you learn something new every day. I know, I don't want to see just like blatant debauchery, but I think, like I said, they could have been more creative in like the things that were happening. I was a little, interested in like the Russian roulette elements, and then when they were going through the betting, but that was like really few and far between, and that was just not the gist of this movie or the meat of it. So other than that, I think I'm going to go with a D+ as well.
Damn, yeah. You are harsh. Like I mentioned, I kind of had my mind changed by reading that it is more self-aware than maybe it lets on. I do wish it were, more blatantly self-aware, and I think it could have really benefited from that, from a few more winks to the audience, or, anything other than Kelsey Grammer and Thomas Jane sort of being a wink to the audience. I think Kelsey Grammer is winking the entire time to the audience. I think Thomas Jane knows he's in a piece of shit and is acting accordingly. and I gotta say, like, there's a scene where he's piloting a drone that's shooting a handgun.
Yeah, I forgot
which
about
I
that.
Which I thought was great. I thought it was just great.
I forgot about that.
So I'm gonna say, like, to be part of this, this is in times like these, this is kind of one of the things we need to rally behind, I think.
Oh boy, I'm afraid about from what's about to happen right now.
No, I'm gonna give it a B minus.
Whoa!
Because I think it's bold. I think it's entertaining enough, and there's enough ancillary crap. Like, I mean, shit. Like you said, there's five stories on the fucking Ringer about it right now, and they fucking produced Showbiz Kids, and they aren't talking about that shit. That's a Ringer film, and they're talking about goddamn Money Plane more than they're talking about that. So. Look, wow. Watch it, read about it, enjoy it, talk to your friends about it. B minus for me. So, that's going to do it for this week. What's coming out next week, Cody? I have no idea.
So it's, next,
I mean, we've already covered,
Money Plane.
But,
where can we go?
Yeah. Well, we'll be covering Money Plane again, for round two, because we're all going to rewatch it. We won't know that.
Money Plane.
Sorry.
the director's cut.
Yeah. Director's cut. We have the directorial debut of Dave Franco called The Rental that comes out next week. We also have a movie that I saw at South by Southwest last year that I had mixed feelings on, but it has really good reviews, which I think is maybe a festival thing. It's called Yes, God, Yes. It is a – how do I delicate
that? Natalie Dyer?
Natalia Dyer from Stranger Things. It's a religious masturbation movie.
Hmm.
Coming of age, literally. and then...
Second Coming, Cody. Second Coming was a better
one. I like that one better.
Yeah.
All right,
you're welcome.
Sorry.
You're
welcome.
It's better than Coming of Age?
Yeah. That's a little too on the nose. I like...
Oh, and Second Coming is not. Okay. Got it. Super subtle. Got it. Okay. And then we'll have a third movie that is yet to be determined. Maybe a movie called Amulet. Maybe a movie called Baby Splitters. I don't know. We'll see.
Baby Splitters.
Second Coming.
Is that a what's his name? Solomon? King Solomon? Yeah. Anyway, if you want to reach us, you can email us at podcast@cinesnob.net. You can find us on Twitter @cinesnob, Facebook, Cinesnob Critic. You can find us, Cody and I, on our other podcasts, ReMCU, Rewatching the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Also, Quarantstream, where we are talking to people about what they're watching during quarantine. Our latest episode is with comedian Vanessa Gonzalez. Part two is out now. We do a lot of Master Pancake talk in that one. Mm-hmm. Did we mention this last week, Jocelyn, that she does a Master Pancake Live rewatch of Lone Star? 911
Lone
Star?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is out now. Cody, what's your other show?
The Ramble, which also includes Ramble Radio on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays as part of a podcast with Jerry Roach and Eddie Pence, where we are also fully video now, which is cool. And also, we didn't mention this last time, but if you are listening to this on audio and you want to watch us, go to our YouTube page. We need 100 subscribers to get a custom URL. So if we could just get those subscribers.
That vanity URL, Or it's on our Facebook page, too. So
yeah.
You can find it there, too. Jocelyn. What's going on at your house?
Oh, gosh. What? Same old, same old.
I saw you got a great score on your pool.
Yeah, thank you.
Pool alkalinity.
Yes. That's what happens. I was out there all day. It was great. I mean, it's Texas. It's,
you know,
like,
what?
Literally 109 degrees outside. So
that is a great pool you have, by the way. You. It's really nice. I only ever had above ground pools because I have white trash in my blood. So.
Oh, come on. Above ground pools aren't white trash.
Oh, come on, dude. They are.
Like, of course they are.
Yeah. But hey, you know what? When that thing, I don't give a shit. I had one of those like vinyl bag ones a few years ago. And I mean, when it was 109 degrees,
you know,
like, whatever, man. I'm
our
getting in the pool.
First house on the south side, we had like a kiddie pool and we definitely got in it and cooled off. Like, that's all you need.
The people that I used to live next door to when I lived at home in our old house, they had an above ground pool and they built a deck around their above ground pool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a big deal. Yeah. I mean, that's like, you know, you see mobile homes that have that around them. So do you have a pool at your apartment, Cody?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you ever go?
I did last summer, but this summer I'm not going anywhere near it.
Good for you. You're taking this so seriously, and I'm glad
you can't
for
get
that.
You can't get coronavirus from the water.
They have not proven that. They have not said that it is.
And
safe.
I've tried.
Also, but also, there's people
the
touching
with the pool.
There's.
I'm
there's
like, don't get in my pool.
Yeah, nobody's allowed except private. For you.
Yeah.
Does your dog? Does your dog? Do your dogs swim?
No, they hate it.
Oh, I love them, swimming dogs.
We put them on a raft and we sail them out.
On cue.
It's gonna happen after this podcast. I call it their Viking funeral. You know how they do that on the, you know.
Oh yeah, Vikings? No, you're gonna shoot firing arrow, fire
really
fiery
dead.
Arrows
it's
at them.
He's alive, but yeah.
Oh.
Yes, okay. Like we push them out and we torture them that way. So.
Do you put little life jackets on them?
I have done that. I got them on Amazon, and they almost drowned in them. So I do.
Man,
I do not vouch for life jackets that you can buy for dogs on Amazon. And almost on cue, he's barking. So
yeah, my old dog, I tried to put him in the water to see if he liked it, and he hated it. I was hoping he'd be a water dog, but he was not.
Yeah, mine are.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else before we go? Where Jocelyn puts her dog in the pool?
Seriously?
No, I don't think so. We've got after next week, the next 2 weeks are like jam packed with stuff in terms of releases coming out. So it's about to get busy around here.
Is anything going to ever beat
Money Plane?
Maybe if there's a movie about a.
Do you know that I watched?
I wanted you to do the dude fucking an alligator one.
That clip's too long. I don't know
how that edited. You need a signal for it.
Yeah.
I did create this just for Cody, though, so I'm going to throw this in. Okay. Ah,
funky butt loving.
Did he say funky butt loving?
The best movie quote of all time.
Yeah.
Funky butt loving.
That kid, the beefy kid at the end, the blonde kid, just reminds me of so many people I went to school with. I bet his family has an above ground pool, if you know what I'm saying.
I think only you're allowed to say that.
Yeah, probably. All right. On that note, I am Jared Kingery.
I'm Cody Viafania.
And I'm Jocelyn Durand.
Thank you for listening to the Cine Snob podcast. To read reviews, interviews, and more, visit cinesnob.net. See you next week.